We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
WGR Sports Radio 550 presents.
You know what I don't like? When I get a Java chip frap and then I'm drinking it and there's a big chip that gets caught in the straw and I can't drink the rest of the Java chip frap. That's what I don't like.
Sports Talk Saturday.
I'm sorry, a what?
A Java chip frap. You don't know what a Java chip frap is?
No.
Oh my gosh.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
So much to learn, so little time to learn it, Derek. 803-0550, the number to call today. Sal Capaccio with you just past 1 p.m. here on a Saturday. We got some storms in the area, but tomorrow's going to be beautiful. You might have to just get through today. I know maybe some rainouts for some of the baseball games, softball games going on out there if you're out with the kids, but picture perfect looking like that for the rest of the weekend. And then into next week, we have our WGR golf tournament on Monday. That is up at Seneca Hickory Stick Golf Course in Lewiston. It's always a great time, and we're going to have great weather, about 80 degrees, sunshine, and not incredible humidity, so it's going to be really, really fun. Welcome back to Sports Talk Saturday, and I'm going to welcome right now onto the West Her Hotline, a guy I've been following for a long time. He's been doing this for a long time, and it's always great to catch up with him and do a little deep dive into some stats and fantasy stuff, and that is KC Joyner. He is a senior NFL analyst, fantasy football insider. You've seen him on ESPN and elsewhere. You can follow him on Twitter at KC Joyner, TFS. KC, thanks a lot for doing this again. Always good to talk to you.
It's great to be back.
Listen, we got a polarizing quarterback here in Buffalo, Josh Allen. He's been polarizing since even before he came out in the draft. You know, people love him or hate him. It seems like there's no in-between with this kid. I want you to go back to before last year's draft and any work that you might have done on him or what you saw of him, what you thought of him, and then kind of revisit that a little bit and where you are now with him.
Where I was with him is kind of where I am with him today, which is that he is very much a risk-taking quarterback. In fact, I think he's the sort of person, remember the old Will Rogers saying that he never met a person that he didn't like? I think that Josh Allen has never seen a vertical pass that he didn't like. When you look at his percentages of passes that he throws that are vertical passes, last year 41.6% of his throws were vertical passes. That's a pass that travels 11 or more yards downfield, and 19.3% of his throws were stretch vertical, which is 20 or more yards downfield. Those are both extremely high numbers, near the top of the league in both categories, and he only threw short passes 40.1% of the time, and that's near the bottom of the league. He just likes to chuck it deep, and he likes to get deep probably too often. So I'd like to see him. I thought that was his modus operandi coming into the season, and I think coming last season, I think it's where he is today too. So,
well, they did go out, they did sign Cole Beasley to help him out in the slot, and you know, some people thought this was square peg round hole simply for exactly what you said. How much can a guy like Cole Beasley, knowing the metrics on him and what he's able to do, fit in with a guy like Allen and really help his progression?
Well, Cole Beasley last year, 75% of his passes were short passes, and that's about what they're going to have him do in Buffalo. He averaged 6.7 yards per attempt in short passes. It's a good number. It's not a great number. He doesn't do much on vertical passes. There are short pass receivers. There are vertical receivers like that, like a Julian Edelman, who can put up great vertical production, and he's just not one of them. So I think he is pretty much a one-trick pony for this team, but that's fine. That's what they need. It helps, but the thing is that Allen's going to have to decide he's going to throw short passes. That's the biggest thing you have with him is that even if you give him a short pass target, maybe because he trusts Beasley, Beasley's going to be a guy he goes to. But Zay Jones had similar metrics to Beasley last year, and he was a guy he could go to as well. So looking at that going, you've got to convince the quarterback to take advantage of the target you give him, or else it's not going to work.
The biggest, you know, polarizing topic with Allen is his completion percentage. It's never been great. It wasn't great coming out of college. He does a lot of things that other guys can't do, but that completion percentage is low. The Bills would like that to go up. I always maintain, Casey, if you're expecting to be 65, 66%, he's never going to be there and he'll always fail in your eyes. But from a broader perspective, from a guy like you who studied this, how much does that number matter in 2019 in the NFL?
You've got to be a high percentage quarterback if you're going to be competing with other quarterbacks who are high percentage quarterbacks. But if you're going, if you're not going to be able to complete a lot of short passes, you need to be able to be have high completion percentage on your vertical and stretch vertical passes. The thing is his short passes, he was successful. Success meaning either you got a completion or you got a defensive penalty, a coverage penalty. Successful 73.6% of the time. That's a very low number for the short pass category. And in vertical, he was successful 42.8% of the time, which is another number that was near the bottom of the league. So he's got to be more successful in either area. And the thing is I have a metric in my draft guide called fantasy points for how many times you get fantasy points, fortune points. It's how many times you get fantasy points on a defensive coverage error or an offensive mistake. How many points you lose up an offensive mistake or how many points you gain off a defensive coverage error. Last year, Josh Allen only gained 36.5 fortune points on defensive plays, meaning that he didn't get many times where he forced the defense to make an error. And that's a low number, and he needs to improve in that number. That number's got to come up. And that's the that's one of the things that you being able to use your targets. It's great to be able to use your targets, but he and that offense have to be able to convince the defense to do him one thing and then beat him with another, because otherwise I don't think he's going to improve on his production.
You mentioned the draft guide. Of course, you have all that available at thefootballscientist.com. It is the Football Scientist Fantasy Football Draft Guide, also the start-sit service as well. We'll get into that a little bit later. I want to ask you about the offensive line and the improvements the Bills made there. How much can that impact a quarterback from what you've seen, transitions, offensive lines, different guys coming in and out? Same offensive coordinator here in Buffalo with Brian Daboll, but really what looks like a brand-new offensive line and a group that has a lot of experience coming in to help Josh Allen.
They need it too, because I measure pass rush rate in that draft guide. And mind you, that's the odd thing. For all the success that Allen doesn't have on short passes, he only had pass rush against him, meaning he either got hurried or something of that nature. On short passes, he only had pass rush 14.7% of the time. That's a very low number. He got a lot of very good protection on the short passes. Where he wasn't getting protection is on the vertical passes. Some of that's on him, because he'll hold the ball too long and he'll start to scramble because he keeps looking for the longer passes instead of taking the short pass that's available to him. But I think that they could see, because since he had some of the worst numbers in pass protection, vertical and stretch vertical passes, I think that he's going to be able to see a dramatic improvement there. Only thing is all the studies I'm doing on offensive lines over the past few years, the offensive lines that tend to do well are ones that have been together for a while. Usually teams at the most want to have one offensive line change. They don't want to change any more than one starter. I think the Bills are changing four starters, and I understand why they're doing it, but it's still a matter of, I think it's going to take some time for that line to gel. So how they do in the first 3-4 weeks of the season, I won't judge that unit based on how they're playing then. I want to see how they're playing by week 8, so it might be a rough start.
And Josh Allen running the ball, he had some historic numbers last year by running for over 100 yards in games, things that he was able to do with his legs. How much of that, do you think plays into him going forward as far as dialing that down a little bit, how much he should use that and where that can really impact him and his growth as a quarterback?
Don't mind what he's doing on scrambling plays, but he only averaged 5.4 yards per attempt on planned running plays where he got good blocking. That's a metric I have, good blocking yards per attempt. 5.4 is a very low number. The Bills did bad in that category as a whole all season long last year at 6.4 yards per attempt and good blocking yards per attempt. That's one of the worst numbers in the league. But he only had 5.4 yards per attempt in his plan plays. That's not good. If you're going to run the football, don't risk your quarterback. Don't risk him getting injured. I know he's a big guy, but you need him around. Don't risk him getting injured, and don't lose the production. You've got a lot of quality running backs. Don't bother having him run the football. Have one of the other guys run the football, and then maybe have him do it on scramble plays or something, or sneaks, or the goal line, do things like that. But otherwise, I don't want him running the football because he's not that productive.
So Robert Foster shows up last year. The last 7 games, he had terrific numbers. He was 11th in the NFL in receiving yards. He was second or third, I think, in yards per target, yards per reception. But they did go out and they spent money on John Brown. They spent money on Cole Beasley. Where does Robert Foster fit in all this? What did you see from him, and what can they do and how to utilize him in Buffalo?
The problem they have with Robert Foster is in his 5 collegiate NFL seasons, he's caught a total of 62 passes. That's not a single season number. That's his entire career, his entire collegiate pro career. So you want to be able to think that he can give him 100 targets. He can stand up to a full season's worth of wear and tear. I don't know that that's the case because he would have ranked last year. Had he had enough targets to qualify, he only had 41 targets for my measurements, and he had to have 48 to qualify as a wide receiver. His 13.3 yards average on medium passes would have ranked 11th, and he had an 18.7 vertical yards per attempt. That would have placed third in the league. So he's that kind of receiver, but if you don't think that he can handle 100 targets, if you think that he's a guy who max might be a 75-target guy, that's why you go get somebody like John Brown, who had 61 vertical passes alone last year and has shown, even though he's had some durability questions too, I'd rather have two guys who might be able to tear a top off of defense who may have durability question marks and rely too much on one guy.
Let's go to the running game for the Bills, which will be something they still will lean on. It definitely took a hit last year. Another reason why they revamped that offensive line. The organization still has belief in LeSean McCoy, even if many people outside don't, considering his age. There's been a lot of talk about him. He is still number one. However, Frank Gore comes in. He's been defying time forever, it seems like. And they do draft Devin Singletary. How do we see the Bills' running back and running game stacking up with all of your metrics?
McCoy did not get good blocking last year. I measured that good blocking yards per attempt. I also have a metric called good blocking rate. That measures how often a running back is getting quality run blocking from his offensive line. It's important because good blocking carries are 3 to 4 times more productive than bad blocking carries. You pretty much have to get good production when you're getting good blocking. You're not going to get very far. Last year, LeSean McCoy only gets good blocking 37.9% of the time, one of the lowest numbers in the league. But when he did get good blocking, he only averaged 6.4 yards per attempt. The Bills team as a whole averaged 6.4 yards per attempt when they get their running backs good blocking. So even though McCoy was, he did not get good blocking, when he did get good blocking, he didn't do better than Chris Ivory, Marcus Murphy, Keith Ford. He doesn't do better than these other run-of-the-mill backs. If he doesn't show early on that that was an anomaly, because he's always been very good in that category, if he doesn't show early on that that was an anomaly, and by the way, his receiving numbers were almost as bad as his rushing numbers on a per-target basis, if he doesn't show that that was an anomaly, if I'm them, I start going, okay, I need to get the ball to Singletary, and I give the ball more to Frank Gore, because frankly, Frank Gore, last year at Miami with a very bad offensive line, he still averaged 7.2 yards per attempt on good blocking carries. So I think he could be the more productive back.
Yeah, it's an interesting situation, the way that they're playing. It's going to be fun to see how this offense evolves around Josh Allen with all the parts. Defensively, boy, I'll tell you what, Casey, I go to every spring practice. I cover this team on the beat, and I don't think I've ever seen, in my years of covering football, an entire defense basically every single day of the spring, everybody be there and on the same page. They are returning, other than Kyle Williams, obviously, where they replace him with Ed Oliver, pretty much 11 guys and then one question outside of Tre'Davious White at corner. They can be pretty good, we think, here in Buffalo. They were number two overall in overall defense last year. How good can this defense be? How really good was it last year?
There's a lot of metrics that stand out with them, even though they don't look like you do. One of the ones that goes against the grain is they only had 35 sacks, and that's not a high total. It's the middle of the league category, the middle of the league number in that category. But they only faced 517 pass attempts. If you look at their pass rush rate, how often they got some sort of pass rush on the quarterback, per my measurement, they got a pass rush rate of 36.2% of the time last year. It's one of the highest numbers in the league. Oliver, a former five-star collegiate recruit, he was dominant when he wanted to be in college, and I think he just wanted to turn into a pro is what he wanted to do, so I think he's going to be highly motivated to reach his talent level there. I think that pass rush rate could go up. If they were facing 600 passes in a year, they would have had 40, 45 sacks. They would have been near the league leaders in that category. And the other thing is that I have measurements for schedules for the upcoming season, and I do a number of them. I do one called matchup points. It measures what kind of pass offenses you're going to be facing. Bills are one of the most favorable matchup point schedules in the league. I also have another one called shootout points, which is how likely you are as a team to get into a shootout contest. The Bills have the most favorable schedule defensively for that. They're facing offenses that, comparative to other offenses, are not likely to get in the high-scoring games. So I think they're going to have a lot of favorable matchups, and even if they don't face a lot of pass attempts this year, I still think they get 40-plus sacks.
Do you, and I apologize for not knowing, do you go into individual defenders? Because I'm curious of what your metrics say about Tre'Davious White and what he's been able to do.
On what I do go into individual cornerback metrics, I'm finding ways to get the offensive defensive linemen more graded. I grade units more than I grade individual players. But if I'm looking at a Tre'Davious White and seeing how he did last year, he did very good in a number of metrics I have. He was one of the top cornerbacks in good coverage rate. I only had him as far as yards per attempt. I had him rated very low. He allowed 6.5 yards per attempt last year overall. That's fantastic. 7.5 yards per attempt on vertical passes. When you tell a vertical pass Tre'Davious White's way, you're getting short pass production out of it. He's just a guy who, if I'm an offense, even though the Bills have a really good defense all the way around, I just don't want to throw any passes his way because he's going to take your receiver's productivity and drop it by a couple, 3 yards per attempt on a consistent basis.
Casey Joyner, the football scientist, joining me here on the Wester Hotline. Go to the website, thefootballscientist.com. You can find his 2019 draft guide as well as his start, sit, service. For the Bills, we have a lot of debates in here, and we have one of our hosts is in probably 30 fantasy leagues. He's just a crazy fantasy guy. His name is Mike Shope, and we'll have a lot of debates and over-unders and things like that. And one of the things we talked about is where these guys rank fantasy-wise, Bills offensive players. If I'm looking at the Bills, just the Bills fantasy players, what am I looking at here, Casey, and how would I kind of want to prioritize them? You know, let's say PPR league, I would say.
PPR league, I'm looking, let's say, at their running backs. I'm doing my rankings. I'm finishing up my rankings right now. But right now, I've got McCoy, frankly, as an RB5. He might get to an RB4 level, but unless he really bounces back and it's a bad idea to think that a 31-year-old running back is going to bounce back. I don't see him ranking much higher. Singletary right now I've got as an RB5 as well. I won't be shocked if his production spikes upwards. So if I'm looking at a late-round flyer, I'm probably going to want to take him. I think they could give him the ball out near the goal line. The receivers, I've got John Brown rated as a wide receiver 6. Beasley and Foster, I'd love Foster's production, but I've got to see more than 41 targets to do much more with him. The Bills defense, I think they're going to be a good spot start defense, but I still don't know if they're going to have enough production on a consistent basis to rate them as a 1, so I probably don't hit them on draft day, but they are definitely a team I'm going to look at for streaming there in the season.
I think TJ Yeldon's interesting. 55 catches last year in Jacksonville. It looks like the Bills want to take that load off of LeSean. We know Frank Gore isn't necessarily going to catch a ton of balls out of the backfield. He's a good pass blocker, but 55 catches, he's caught 171 for his 4-year career. How is TJ Yeldon rated, basically, with you?
If I'm in a PPR league, I'm still probably thinking of him again. The thing is I think Buffalo still wants, if McCoy bounces back, they're still going to run a lot of the offense through him, and they would run what I call a lead alternate situation, which means that he'd be the lead back and everybody else would play for an alternate back, and then a lead back can get 250 touches in a season. But if McCoy doesn't do that, that's when it really opens the door for Yeldon. I mentioned earlier McCoy's metrics on pass catching, his receiving metrics. He only averaged 8 yards per attempt on screen passes when he got good blocking. It's one of the worst totals in the league. And even when he didn't get good blocking, overall he averaged 2.9 yards per attempt on screen passes. You threw a screen pass with Sean McCoy's way, you're not even getting 3 yards per attempt. He didn't do very well when they didn't throw him screen passes either, so he had some of the worst production pass catching-wise. If that number drops, he had 46 targets last year per my measurements. If I'm Buffalo and he can't produce any better than that, I send all of them to T.J. Yeldon's way. And if that happens, Yeldon suddenly becomes a viable RB4 in PPR leagues.
What are we looking at league-wise? There was this huge movement a couple of years ago to stay away from running backs and just load up on wide receivers and find running backs. Now it seems like we're kind of shifting the other way. What are we looking at top of the league, how you want to maybe attack your draft in your first couple of rounds, maybe even 3-4 picks in?
I think that running back now has finally got enough depth to where you pretty much have to go running back in any type of league format. You can't just sit back and go with other players. You can't hope that you can go. I have the zero running back theory. I get that. But if you're running zero running back theory against Christian McCaffrey, Saquon Barkley, Ezekiel Elliott, and those guys playing at that level with the volume of running backs that there are at the top. And by the way, for anybody who's thinking of getting Todd Gurley, you better be picking up Daryl Henderson as a backup because Henderson's value is shooting up in leagues because nobody thinks that Gurley's going to play a full season. But you have to have top running backs. I'm also saying, though, people need to rethink their strategies in quarterbacks. A lot of people have been waiting to go on quarterback because they think there's so much depth. Last year, 8 quarterbacks posted 20 or more fantasy points per game. There have only been 39 quarterbacks who have done that in the last 10 years, I believe it is. Or the last 8 years, that many quarterbacks have thrown that many, and most of that happened last year. It means that instead of getting 17 points out of your quarterback fantasy position and being okay with it, you need to get 20. And so you probably have to think of going quarterback earlier in draft than you have in recent years.
Is Josh somebody who resonates pretty early on as far as quarterbacks, especially given his legs and maybe scoring running on the ground?
I don't know that consistency-wise that I would want him as a 1, but if you tell me that I can have him as a 2 and I can put him, if I'm a 2 quarterback lead, I'm definitely going to be thinking him as a as one of the top two. But if I'm in a standard league or even in a PPR league, if I'm in a league that has just one quarterback, I'm thinking of him as a good QB2 backup, but he's also he's hit or miss. So you better be, you know, you got to be aware that if you put him out there, he's a guy who's capable of winning a game for you, but he can also be a guy that puts up 11 points and you have to make up the difference somewhere else. So he's a hit or miss guy, but if I'm looking at a QB2 I want to take in later rounds, he's somebody I would consider. I got him ranked 19th right now.
Is it basically like you got to go with Barkley over the other running backs, or is there really a debate here with Elliott or even McCaffrey up there? Because Barkley seems like he's trending as the overall number one, if not pick overall, at least running back overall. Is there a gap after that, or is it close?
I had, going into my initial rankings, and I'm still probably going to be at that when I'm going to finish the guide in the next week or so, I had about five running backs who I could say would be a contender for the number one spot. But Barkley was the number one guy because he's so central to their offense. He can, as many targets as he can catch, he can keep up with McCaffrey in that category. And last year, Barkley, in the good blocking yards per attempt category, he had 10.6 yards per attempt. It led the league in that category, actually second in the league in that category. And as great as the other backs are, I think he has more breakaway ability than they do, and the Giants have also helped him with some of the talent they have around him. So it's a slight edge for him over the others. But, yeah, he's so central to the offense in the way that none of the other backs are that I've got to make him number one overall.
I'm interested in what your thought is on Le'Veon Bell after missing a year. He's in the Bills division, obviously, so for football reasons as well. But in fantasy reasons, going to a place where really the head coach has used running back by committee. The stories are now that he really didn't want him, or at least pay that kind of money to bring him in. They're going to have to kind of run a system that really kind of integrates him a little bit more than maybe Adam Gase wanted to. How do you see him fitting in, especially after a year off?
Le'Veon Bell, over the past two seasons prior to last year, had subpar numbers in my good blocking yards per attempt category. He was not, I mean, I'm talking below average numbers in that category. He was not very good there, and that's why the Steelers were able to replicate his production fairly easily. And I think that when he goes to the Jets, I think he's going to be in the same boat. They don't have a great blocking wall. I think he'll still get better blocking numbers than he did because Gase has done a good job of getting the most out of. He got so much. He did so well with Miami for so little talent that he's an underrated coach. So I think he'll get better blocking there. I just don't know that they're going to want to direct the entire offense through him. I think that they are going to make it. I don't know that he won't quite be a bell cow, but I think he's probably more likely to be that lead alternate back, the lead back and lead alternate setup. I think it might be more likely to be there, and he may only get 300 touches in the season. And if he drops from 350 to 400 down to 300, you can drop him near the top of the first round. I've got him as an RB, overall RB8. Remembers, I've got him as the 8th ranked running back, so low-tiered RB1 instead of contending for the top.
And finally, KC, the two big wide receivers who changed teams, how you think that impacts Odell Beckham Jr. going to the Browns and Antonio Brown going to the Raiders?
I think Odell Beckham is going to be, it'll be a wide receiver one. They're going to direct a lot of the offense through him. I like Jarvis Landry's production last year, but Odell Beckham is going to have better production. By the way, he didn't have a greater production at a yards per target basis last year, so it could be a step up for him. Having said that, Baker Mayfield, his metrics weren't quite as good as people were thinking they were last year, but I think the combination will do very well, so I'm very sold on him. I'm not as sold on Antonio Brown going to Oakland, because if you look at John Gruden's history and you say, how many passes has he thrown his number one target? There was a top receiver in his offense. He throws like 137 passes a season to the top receiver in his offense. Antonio's used to getting 170, 180, and I just don't think that Gruden's going to send that many targets his way. So I think that Antonio is still going to be a strong wide receiver one, especially in PPR environments. And if you're getting 140 targets, you're still there. I just don't think he contends for the top anymore just because that offense isn't going to utilize him that way.
KC, tell everybody what you have and how they can get it.
I have a draft guide and a start sit service at thefootballscientist.com. Draft guide's going to be done. I'm anticipating about July 17th. I think it might be on July 15th. I'm barreling through the last portions of it right now. But it's my 16th year of doing this draft guide. I've got a wide variety of metrics, even wider than what we just talked about here. They're all color-coded. New rankings for all the players, upside, downside, overall rankings. There's just a slew of information in there, and the Start Sit service is updating my weekly charts during the season. You can find it at thefootballscientist.com. If you use the discount code BUFFALO, you get $5 off.
There you go. Awesome. Casey, always a pleasure to talk to you. I appreciate and really appreciate all the hard work you put into this stuff. Thank you very much.
Appreciate it.
All right, that is KC Joyner. Find him at thefootballscientist.com. Good stuff there. He is a smart, smart guy. I've been following him for a long time. Love having him on. We've done it a few times over the years. You got the draft guide there. You got the start sit service there. People have all these books and services you can subscribe to for all these things, but there are some that I really enjoy and really like and have looked at, and he's one of them. You know, Warren Sharp's another one I like. He does a lot of really good work. I like his draft guide if you're a fantasy player. But he goes beyond fantasy, right? It's what you can maybe expect from the team and some of their tendencies and what they're doing and Josh Allen and the offense and where they're going with all of that. Hey, in case you missed the news, today's my last day as the main Sports Talk Saturday host. I'm not going anywhere. Nothing else about my job is changing. I'm still the Bills beat reporter here. I'm still on the sidelines, all that. Just Saturdays. It's been 8 years. I got hired at WGR and started on Saturdays. A lot of you have spent Saturdays with me over the years. But my son, he's 5 years old. He's getting older now. He's playing sports. My schedule's packed. I went to management a while ago and said, hey, would you mind if I kind of transitioned away from Saturdays? And they said, no problem at all, because Saturdays are in good hands with guys like Nate Geary and Brayton Wilson and Derek Kramer and Joe DiBiase and Kyle Powell and all those guys. So they're going to take you away on Saturdays after I head out of here today, although I will be on during Bills training camp shows and some select shows throughout the year when they need me to host and come in here and do Saturdays. But I want to thank everybody who has been around for the ride on Saturdays, especially all the producers I've had, the guests that have come aboard. They've done a great job. But you, the listener, we've spent a lot of Saturdays together, whether you're mowing the lawn, out driving around, whatever it is, cleaning the house in the winter, you're just hanging inside, you got it on the app, whatever it is. Thank you so much. You've been a part of my life for Saturdays on late mornings and early afternoons for 8 years. But it's time for me to go and watch Max play some T-ball, I think. That's what it's time for. So I'm going to do that on Saturdays. Plus, Derek, the other byproduct is here. I get to go to maybe some Syracuse football and basketball games and take the little man on Saturdays.
You know what? You do so much for this place as it is that, you know what? You deserve to kick back on a Saturday.
I'm going to do that. I'm going to do that. Well, thank you. You've done a great job for me. I appreciate all you've done and on Saturdays. And like I said, you're still going to hear plenty of me. I'll still be on Monday through Friday and filling in and on the Extra Point show on Mondays, 10 to 12, and still be doing my Bills stuff. So nothing like that is changing. The only thing that's changing is you won't hear me on Saturdays as much. So I want to thank everybody for that.
I will say, as someone that's been here for, what have I been doing this with you for, about a year and change now?
Probably something like that, yeah.
It's been a blast, my friend.
I appreciate you as well.
I will miss you on Saturdays. Nate's going to drive me up a wall. Yeah. But it's been fun working with you on these Saturdays. We'll be doing this stuff.
Yeah, we'll work together many other times in many other ways, I'm sure.
I'll be seeing you in the building on Monday, probably.
We got the Monday golf tournament coming up, and you're going to have the afternoon show is going to be hosted by Joe and Nate and Brayton. I think they're going to be around. I think all three. I'm not really sure. Joe and Nate, at least, I think.
Joe and Nate, and I'm on the board there.
You're on
the
board there.
I've got the cap on Monday.
All right, well, there you go. And you got the nightcap. That's right, on Monday. In the meantime, Donovan Bennett joined me from Toronto, Sportsnet Toronto, and I'm going to rerun that for you, because I want you to hear the stuff he said about Kawhi and Mitch Marner going on with the Maple Leafs and all that kind of stuff. And we'll do that coming up next on WGR. I want to thank my guests today, including Donovan Bennett and, of course, the one you just heard, Casey Joyner, Mike Carver from CBS Sports on the Bench, and also Patrick Hammer giving us some weather update earlier today. And Joe DiBiase called in because the Sabres made a move. They actually signed Marcus Johansson. We'll have more about that at our website at WGR550.com. We'll take a timeout right now, and Donovan Bennett comes your way from up in Toronto, Sportsnet here on WGR.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Head right out now to the West Purr Hotline. Donovan Bennett is standing by from Sportsnet Toronto. And Donovan, thanks a lot, first of all, for joining me on the show today. I know your morning really changed as of overnight when you went to bed last night, I'm assuming.
Yeah, it certainly did. I full disclosure, I have a newborn, so I find myself getting up in the middle of the night every once in a while. And when I got up for his middle-of-the-night feed, and saw, you know, my phone just blowing up. I was like, oh, well, I guess we've got some Kawhi Leonard news. So, I've been up pretty much since then. But, yeah, what what a time to be a fan of the NBA, to be someone covering the NBA. NBA Twitter never sleeps, and neither do GMs and presidents. And we had a crazy night last night. You're right.
No doubt about it. Congratulations, by the way, on the newborn as well. So this signing of Kawhi Leonard to the Clippers wasn't completely out of the blue. We knew it was Raptors, Clippers, or Lakers. What is interesting to me, though, was it appears as though wherever he went, he basically said, hey, if you can get Paul George to come, I'll go there. And that included the Raptors. They just didn't appear to have enough assets or wherewithal to be able to make that happen. So eventually it was the Clippers who stepped up and they got them both.
Yeah, and it depends on what you read and who you believe. Either they didn't have the assets and the wherewithal, or they didn't have the stomach to play, some high salaries over the next little while and lose, Pascal Siakam, a young, interesting player, lose basically everything in terms of the draft capital moving forward, and then potentially bring back Russell Westbrook. And not necessarily know if they are being used for leverage to sweeten the deal for the Clippers, or if it was a serious negotiation. So either way, the Raptors are kind of back to where they would have been if they didn't trade for Kawhi Leonard in the first place. They've gotten lots of cap money coming off the books. And a year from now, they're kind of in NBA purgatory where they're not really, really elite, but they're also not bad enough that they're going to be a lottery player and be able to improve their team with a high draft pick. The difference is with the rental of Kawhi over the year, they have a championship. And that's something that will change the franchise, will change sports in this country here in Canada for a long time.
So how does this pairing look? Looking at them on the court with Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, when you envision that, how do you think this pairing stacks up, and especially in the Western Conference and where they're going to have to go and who they're going to have to defeat?
Yeah, I mean, on paper, they look great. It's weird, but the best team that's going to take the floor at Staples Center next year is going to be the Los Angeles Clippers, not the Lakers. And the Lakers have LeBron James and Anthony Davis. But when you look at a closing lineup with Patrick Beverley and Lou Williams and Kawhi Leonard and Paul George and Montrezl Harrell down low, that's scary both, offensively, the two guys who can create their own shot and create for others, but also defensively, because everyone in that lineup other than Lou Williams is a plus-plus defender. So certainly the league is wide open. There are seven teams in the West who consider themselves title contenders. There are probably only two in the East, with Philly and Milwaukee being the two ones. In 2 years from now, when Kevin Durant is healthy, I think Brooklyn's that conversation. But by far, the best team on paper right now is the Los Angeles Clippers.
Donovan Bennett joining me here. He is a host at Sportsnet Toronto. You can follow him on Twitter at Donovan Bennett. By the way, two N's there in Donovan. So I want to ask you about the Raptors and where they go from here. But on Kawhi specifically, first of all, does it seem like now, and especially after the season he had, that he's kind of the guy in charge of the league? I always thought it was LeBron, really, and what he could do, but it really seems like he has so much power that did you ever really think that a guy like Kawhi and his personality and what he could do could be wielding that type of sword?
Yeah, I mean, the Kanye West line, how could one man have so much power? I mean, that's more so right now about Kawhi Leonard in terms of how he impacts the NBA. I think LeBron James impacts things around the sport, culturally speaking, about politics, setting fashion trends with his multiple businesses and his hand in the entertainment world. But Kawhi Leonard had six, seven teams waiting on his decision, not just the three teams that he was potentially going to sign with, but also other teams who had trades with those teams that were being held up by Kawhi's decision, and multiple players impacted by it. Danny Green, his friend, impacted by it because where he went depended on what Kawhi decided. Literally, the league waited for Kawhi, and on the court, he's someone who you can't speed up. He plays at his own pace, and he certainly made his free agent decision at his own pace, even though I think a lot of that is how we are as a culture. We want everything microwaved in right now, and because $3 billion were spent, in the first day in free agency, we expected Kawhi to sign, but KD made his decision on July 4th. LeBron has made his decisions in the past on July 10th and July 14th. In the grand scheme of things, Kawhi didn't take a long time, but there were so many people waiting on him with bated breath. It seemed like forever.
On the Raptors and how fans are feeling, my position has been, I know this is hard if you're in Toronto, but as an outside observer, I say, look, you can't hate on the man. He brought you something that you never thought you could have. He brought you a championship. He didn't even want to come there in the first place. He did. He did everything you asked, and you could never take that away. So don't hate on him. Sure, be upset. Be disappointed. You're not going to have the man, but, you know, wish him well, not ill will. What are the reactions from fans after he has decided not to sign with the Toronto Raptors?
Gutted, naturally. And I think it's a bit of a mix. And I agree with you. It would be hypocritical for Raptors fans in Toronto, in Canada, to be upset with Kawhi, given what he delivered them in his 1 year here in the championship. And if you're willing to welcome back John Tavares with open arms, and because he decides to come home to Toronto, and if you're willing to lure Mike Babcock, as you know, from Detroit and technically from Buffalo potentially, to come back not to his hometown but to his home country in Canada, well, then you can't be upset if Kawhi Leonard makes a similar decision in a different sport. Some people are a little bit upset because Kawhi leaves for nothing, at least the Thunder got a haul back in terms of picks and assets for Paul George. You have to remember, the Thunder also gave up a haul in terms of players for Paul George in the first place. I think this was a calculation that was really smart by the Toronto Raptors, Bobby Webster, the GM, Masai Ujiri, the president. A one-year rental that gives you a finals MVP and a championship, that's a decision that you make 10 times out of 10. And I love the fact that they're willing to regroup with this group, probably sell off some of their older assets and Gasol and Lowry and build a young team that can develop into a championship contender in a couple years.
So how do they look on the court next year, the Raptors?
I mean, it depends what part of the year. I think before the trade deadline, it's going to be tough to move a guy like Kyle Lowry, a guy like Marc Gasol, who opted in for $25 million because he wasn't going to get that on the open market, a guy like Serge Ibaka. These are aging stars who we saw in the playoffs are very good, but also they picked up injuries over time, and they're on expiring contracts. Since the rest of the league has really spent their cap money at this point, it's tough to move that salary, even for a one-year situation, and get anything back for it. But I do think towards the trade deadline next year, you'll be able to move some of those pieces, recoup some value, because let's be honest, the Raptors, even with the championship core, without Kawhi Leonard, without Danny Green, this is not a championship team next year. So you really want to see Pascal Siakam take more onus, OG Anunoby develop more. Fred VanVleet, could he be a lead guard and not just a guard coming off the bench? Next year is going to be about research on your players and development, R&D, looking to go into free agency over the next two summers to really get another elite-level player like Kawhi. And the guy that the Raptors would be circling and really be saving their cap space for would be Giannis when he comes up in 2 years, a guy who has history with Masai Ujiri, and there's a huge Greek community here in Toronto. That would be a type of player the Raptors would look to spend the free agent money they have coming off the books on.
All right, last basketball question that I want to ask about Marner. What happens to Russell Westbrook? Do they just hold on to him because of tickets and talent, or do they look to move him because they're not going to win with him there, and with that salary and what they could also get for him, maybe Oklahoma City decides to finally cut ties?
Yeah, I mean, there's rumors that Westbrook was in the potential trade talks to Toronto, and maybe the Knicks take him. Maybe they want to salvage their offseason, and he's someone that you could sell. And, you know, his brash attitude would certainly work in New York, and he plays so hard every night that the fans at MSG would love him. But when you look across the board, there aren't a lot of teams that are looking for a point guard, and there's not a lot of teams that are looking to take back, you know, $170 million in salary. So it's tough to find a suitor where it makes sense to trade Russell Westbrook back, where you're not going to take back, you know, 10 cents on the dollar. If there's an injury next year to someone like Mike Conley or another point guard where a team is a championship level, but they have an injury and Westbrook could help that situation, maybe, but you're still taking in lots of years on the back end of that contract. Again, a guy like Kyle Lowry would be more pliable in a situation like that because he's on an expiring deal. I think that other than the Knicks, I don't see really another suitor in the NBA that would make sense to take back Westbrook or who had the cap space. Even if you thought the Lakers would make sense, they don't really have the maneuverability to do it once Anthony Davis' trade goes through.
More with Donovan Bennett from Sportsnet Toronto after this timeout on WGR.
Talking with Donovan Bennett. He is of Sportsnet in Toronto. Just touched on what happened with Kawhi. And now I have to ask you, how much can Toronto fans take if Mitch Marner were to leave? What are the chances that they get a double punch in the gut from everything you've heard, people you've talked to, what the buzz is up there? What is the real chance at all that Mitch Marner could get an offer sheet and eventually leave the Toronto Maple Leafs?
Yeah, well, I mean, if he gets an offer sheet for the amount of money that it would take for Toronto not to match, then you're talking about four picks, four first-round picks coming back the other way. And Joey Vendetta has said, he's kind of reported that there is an offer sheet out there that's McDavid-level money, $12.5 million for Marner. So who the team is, whether or not it'll actually get sent, who knows? You look at the teams that possibly could be in that conversation, Montreal. That would be a big loss for Leafs fans to lose him to your rival in Canada, the New York Islanders. Ooh, that would be cruel irony. You take John Tavares, and then back goes the other way. Lou Lamoriello takes back Marner with an offer sheet. But Patrick Laine is a guy who's out there who, you know, may get an offer sheet as well for similar money. And we saw Braden Point with Tampa Bay basically being offered an offer sheet from Montreal and said, well, I actually want to stay in Tampa Bay. And I think a dark horse team would be the Buffalo Sabres, who, whether it's Laine or Marner, they could slide him in right away, and he would make sense with the young core that's developing there. I think the smart hockey decision would be not to match at 12.5 because that's crazy money, but to take back the picks and maybe even use those picks on two or three players that you can get back to help this roster right now. But the fan base loves Marner so much. He's local. And even though they love Tavares and they love Matthews, seeing the little guy that could rack up all these points and assists is something that the fan base has fallen in love with. And so if Kawhi and Marner leave in the same week, man, there's going to be some group therapy for Toronto sports fans.
Yeah, no doubt about that. What do fans think about the way that the Maple Leafs have been built now that things are happening and you see that they still need help on the blue line, obviously. They do have these scores. They're paying all this money. They're top-heavy on their roster there. But, you know, it seemed that originally like Kyle Dubas was making all these great moves, but now they're in situations where they're kind of paying a little bit for that. So what's the general outlook? And then obviously you have the Matthews-Babcock, I don't know, drama that went on last offseason, it seemed like. You know, where is everybody right now with that organization and how they've been handled?
Yeah, well, when the cap didn't go up as much as people thought, you could tell there was going to be a situation. You already had one because, as you mentioned, they're so top-heavily balanced in terms of their books offensively. Matthews is making $11.6 million a year. Tavares is making $11 million. Nylander is making $6.9 million. So if you bring Marner in for anywhere from the 9 to 12 range, you've spent the majority of your cap on offensive players, and your real issues are defensive. So even though you've got Riley at 5 and Anderson at 5, those guys alone can't keep pucks out of the net. And for a group that is quickly getting more expensive, but yet hasn't gotten out of the first round, it's really tough to see how you construct this roster and have them able to win cups year in and year out. You look at the great dynasties, whether it's Chicago or Pittsburgh over the last couple of years. They won their championships when their star players were on their entry-level deals and were affordable and they could spend around them. Well, the window for the Leafs to do that is now already gone, and that's why I think this Marner decision is so fascinating and so tough.
All right, man, I appreciate it. How's our guy Vlad Jr. doing up there since he got the call-up?
Yeah, so far so good. I mean, the power is unmatched. I think people are really looking for him to make a splash at the home run derby because his practice sessions in BP have been crazy. And there's been a lot of losses here in Toronto, and they're on pace to lose over 100 games. So a win at the home run derby would feel extra sweet for the Blue Jays fans. We're looking forward to the future of Vlad Jr.
Well, we loved watching him here as well. Donovan, thanks so much for your time. You got a boy or a girl, your newborn? What do you got, son or daughter?
A little boy, Desmond. So hopefully, he's not my age before Toronto sees another championship.
Hey, listen, I have a 5-year-old. I've lived 46 years without seeing one here in Buffalo, and I'm hoping my 5-year-old sees one, and maybe I'm still alive when it happens, if you get my drift.
Yeah, I hear you. I hope so, too.
All right, thanks a lot, Donovan. I appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
No worries. Take care.
Thank you very much to Donovan Bennett and all the other guests that came your way today. Thank you for listening. ESPN Radio is up next on WGR.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.